It was soon after Election Day in 2020, when, in a rural county in southwest Michigan, a man walked into a clerk's office. He was dressed in official-looking clothing and identified himself as a private investigator who was conducting a criminal investigation into election fraud. The clerk was surprised to hear this, having had no discrepancies in the voter count, but answered his questions nonetheless, as his deputy recorded the conversation. When he asked to see her vote counting machines, the clerk made it clear. He could look, but could not touch. He got up to leave instead. But before doing so, insisted that she not mention his visit to anybody, to protect the investigation. The man's name is Dar Leaf, but he's better known as the Constitutional Sheriff of Barry County, Michigan.
God bless Dar Leaf for his integrity and what he's trying to do.
And that's Sheriff Richard Mack.
He can confiscate those machines. He has the authority to do that. He is the elected sheriff. He is the ultimate investigator and protector in that county.
Dar Leaf and Richard Mack are leaders of the Constitutional Sheriffs, a movement of sheriffs across the U.S. who see themselves as holding supreme authority in their county, answering to no one but the people and God. They believe that they have unchecked power, meaning that they can take the law into their own hands.
That's not government's role. Government's role is to protect my God-given rights, not destroy them.
Dar Leaf has spent the last 4 years investigating election fraud and believes he can do it by any means necessary and that no one can stop him. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. Welcome to the surreal world of the Constitutional Sheriffs leading local communities down the rabbit hole. I'm Arnie Duke, and this is The Whole Truth.
My name is Richard Ivan Mack. I am from Arizona, and I'm known as Sheriff Mack. That is my nom de guerre and nom de plume.
Sheriff Mack is the founder of the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association, the CSPOA, and, what you might call, the godfather of the movement. He looks just like a sheriff from an old western. Tall and tanned, hair slicked back, a bright white smile, with an official-looking badge pinned to his chest. The CSPOA is his life. It's displayed across his car's vanity license plate. His old car had the logo, a bald eagle and sheriff's star covering the entirety of its hood. Mack loves being a sheriff, even though he hasn't actually been one since the 90s. His story starts a little bit earlier.
I hired on with Provo Police in 1979. I was a patrol officer. I was an undercover narcotics officer. That was really very traumatic for me. And my wife. I had a different name, a different driver's license. I lived in a different place. I could not be seen with my wife or my children. It was extremely difficult for me. I absolutely hated every bit of it. I pretended to be a cab driver, and I got to know people in the bars, and it was very foreign to me because I never drank or smoked, or I never smoked marijuana in my life, except when I was an undercover cop. And I had to protect my identity. And then,
while he was working undercover, Mack became disillusioned with what he saw as a focus on numbers in policing.
I started to question things when I was a rookie cop. I started questioning, well, why do we write all these tickets? Why do we write all these citations? And so there was an incident where I was writing a lady a ticket, and I realized that she wasn't in the wrong. I was. And so that's when I started questioning what we were doing, and I wanted to know why we had government, and I ran smack in the face of my oath of office and the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, and I started studying all of that and a lot. And I kept a World Book Encyclopedia in my patrol car as I was reading the United States Constitution.
It's here where he came across the concept of a constitutional sheriff. Sheriffs who see themselves as the highest law in the land, operating on equal footing with other important officials like the Supreme Court of the United States.
In America, the people are the most powerful entity in our government. We, the people, are the first three words of our Constitution. And you've heard lots of founding fathers and statesmen say over the years that all political power is inherent in the people. The people are the only one who appoint the sheriff. He answers directly to the power source. The sheriff has no other boss. He doesn't report to the county commissioners. He doesn't report to the county attorney. But his only supervisor and boss are the people in his county.
Constitutional lawyers, however, have said that these claims are a pure fabrication.
In 1988, I moved home to Arizona and I ran for Graham County Sheriff in my hometown. It's a small area with a lot of copper, cattle, and cotton. And I was elected twice. And during that time, I sued the federal government.
In the early 90s, Mac became radicalized by the idea that the federal government was overstepping the mark, doing too much to influence what was happening on a local level. He became one of a handful of sheriffs to challenge the Brady Bill, signed by then-President Bill Clinton, which was meant to make it harder for people to buy guns. He sued the government on the grounds that they were trying to force sheriffs to enforce an unconstitutional gun control law.
I sued the Clinton administration, took the case all the way to the United States Supreme Court, and I won.
The case made him a hero on the far right. After years of being a pro-gun figure on the right, Mac decided to formalise the constitutional sheriffs movement into a real network. And so, for the last 14 or 15 years, the group has been the main driving force of the idea that sheriffs are the ultimate power in the US. They're elected by the people, which is relatively unique in the world for law enforcement officials. They believe that because of that, their power comes from the people. Their only duty is to protect the people, and therefore federal and state laws don't apply to them.
The history of the office of sheriff goes way back over 1,000 years. In old England and Anglo-Saxon law, he was the reeve of the shire. He was the shire reeve, and that became the name the sheriff. And he has always been the ultimate protector of the people.
Research into the constitutional sheriff's movement tells a different story. It appears to have grown out of an idea called posse comitatus, which comes from a far-right anti-Semitic religious sect that developed in the late 60s and early 70s in the US. The idea was that sheriffs could nominate or create groups of people, posses, to do their bidding, who weren't deputized or trained. The groups could be used to do whatever the sheriff wanted, to crack down on people who they felt were acting out.
But the purpose of the posse is simply what it's always been. If you've ever seen any movies of old westerns like High Noon with Gary Cooper, or even Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
You must be crazy coming in here to raise a posse. Frank's got friends in this room. You ought to know that.
After they robbed a train or bank or something, the sheriff got all the townspeople together and called them to come help. You're my posse. And so this goes way back. And we honestly feel that every sheriff should have a posse. The people who are in charge of the sheriff, actually helping him keep the peace or helping him in a dire situation of a natural disaster or any emergency. The sheriff can utilize the posse any way that he wants. Our main goal is to keep the peace and protect the people in the county.
It's true that on a day-to-day basis, most of what they get up to is pretty normal. Posses seem, at face value, to be a good thing. But researchers say that the reality is a lot of these posses are trained in using weapons. They are armed. A lot of the time they feel as if they are empowered to arrest people because the sheriff will encourage it.
Having a posse, again, is up to the sheriff, and how he utilizes them is up to him. How he trains them is up to him. As a matter of fact, Sheriff Joe Arpaio in Maricopa County, right here where I live now, had about 2,500 on his posse. And that posse even investigated the fraudulent document, birth certificate, that Barack Obama released. And indeed, I saw the evidence on that, and it was fraudulent. If Barack Obama had been smart, he wouldn't have released anything. about his birth certificate. Just said, hey, you know, I don't have to prove anything. I was born here in Hawaii and just left it at that. But he didn't. But the what he released was a piece of trash. And so, but the posse literally performed the investigation on that, on the president of the United States.
Aside from Sheriff Joe Arpaio's investigation, there is no official evidence that Barack Obama's birth certificate is fraudulent. It's been reported that some constitutional sheriffs have links to militias, that they endorse and promote them. Some researchers say that militias and posses are, to an extent, interchangeable. Back in 2009, Mack became a board member of the Oath Keepers, the far-right anti-government militia whose leaders have been convicted of violent crimes on January 6th. At the time, he wrote, "The Oath Keepers and I were a marriage that was made in heaven."
Yes, I was. Yes, I was. I was on the board of directors with Oath Keepers. But the lie that the extremist leftists have said about me is that I was a founding member of Oath Keepers. That's a lie. I was not. I was asked to be on the board, and at the time, they were an educational organization to get people, military and police, to obey their oath of office. That's all it was.
The Southern Poverty Law Center has described the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association, the CSPOA, as an anti-government organization with links to many other extremist groups. But when I asked Mack if sheriffs' posses had to be armed and military trained, he said,
"No, that's bunk. That's a bunch of trash. No. Has nothing to do with that."
Mack has recruited mass support for the CSPOA through conferences, although they're probably not the kind of conferences you've been to before. They're often held in Las Vegas or Florida. Sheriff Mack is the headline speaker, the center of attention, and can be seen holding court with journalists surrounding him or posing with attendees for photographs wearing a 10-gallon hat. There are medbed stalls being set up. These are devices that conspiracists claim will cure any ailment if you just lie in them for a few minutes. And there are big tables selling T-shirts with AI-generated images of Trump printed on them as a revolutionary war hero with beautifully coiffed hair and a six-pack. When Mack finally takes to the stage, he makes a speech which he has done variations of hundreds of times for over a decade. He recites an imagined history of America through a made-up tale about Rosa Parks, who he likens himself to.
The Rosa Parks story is part of my presentation, and I love her story. It's very historic and it's very powerful. But most people forget that her battle was against government. And the reason that she was so brave is that she was willing to stand against the norms of the time and against corrupt government. She was arrested by corrupt police officers or deputies. And so on December 1st, 1955, in Montgomery, Alabama, she refused to get to the back of the bus. She refused to give her seat to a white man. She just said, "No, I'm not going to do that." I said that when I sued the Clinton administration. They were trying to force the sheriffs to work for the federal government for free to enforce an unconstitutional gun control law. So I feel like I was a little bit similar to Rosa.
In Mack's version of the story, Rosa Parks would have been helped by a constitutional sheriff who refused to arrest her when she did not move to the back of the bus.
If a constitutional sheriff had been there and heard the call come out, I say in my story that he took Deputy Jones with him to go handle this call. And he gets on the bus and he walks up to Mrs. Parks and says, "Ma'am, what seems to be the problem here?" And then in my interpretation of it and my actual fiction story, but should have been true, is that she looks up at the sheriff and says, "Why can't we just be left alone?" And I think we feel that way today. Why can't government just leave us alone?
The conferences will often host a parade of speakers, a who's who of the election denial movement, with constitutional sheriffs, prominent far-right figures, and conspiracy theorists all making appearances. The former US National Security Advisor Michael Flynn can often be seen there. Speeches often turn to election denial conspiracies. When I asked about his links to the election denial movement, Mack said,
I'm not an election denier. I just want integrity in the elections. And sheriffs should be taking a stronger stand on that.
The CSPOA has spent the last year mobilizing across the U.S. and building relationships with figures close to Trump.
Well, what we feel about the Trump red wave and Trump getting elected, we think this was a great opportunity for us to get rid of the corruption in Washington, D.C. There is so much corruption there.
While the president-elect has not directly endorsed the movement, Donald Trump has spent recent years courting sheriffs. He's also made it his mission to eradicate huge swathes of the federal government, which would hand over more power to local law enforcement like county sheriffs. Their position is powerful because of their day-to-day operation in local communities. They're going to schools and community groups and speaking to people who trust them on a one-to-one basis, which gives them the opportunity to spread radical or extremist ideas to people across the nation. Experts say that in the next 4 years, it's likely we'll see more constitutional sheriffs, more posses, and more militias working alongside the Trump administration. As elected sheriffs, they have an official mandate to police their county. They feel emboldened and empowered to do whatever they want. There are already border militias actively talking about working with the Trump administration to help deport people because they believe they have the skills and the expertise to help do it. The rise of the constitutional sheriff's movement shows how conspiracy theories have become baked into community life. To be a conspiracy theorist is now worn as a badge of honour. Because when you're hearing about these ideas, not only from the people at the top of politics, but at a local level, from the people you see day in and day out, there's no way of escaping the idea that the world is filled with conspiracies. In the next episode, we find out how one woman created her own village online after her real-life community abandoned her.
I really feel like I've now created my own community, whom I call my village online. I don't feel isolated up here. Content. I'm so content. I don't need a big, I don't need a big group of friends around me.
Thank you for listening to The Whole Truth. And a special thank you to Wired journalist David Gilbert, whose research helped me make this episode. See you next time.